Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. The last 10 minutes of today's program we're spending with Rita Marker, Director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. You might have seen the story. Brains of vegetative patients show life, from the Los Angeles Times. I wonder about that term vegetative. Is it accurate? Is it a good description of what we're dealing with here? And it should be any surprise to us that allegedly vegetative patients are showing signs of brain activity. Rita, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Good to be back.
What do you make of that term, vegetative or persistent vegetative state? Are we talking about equivalence here, and are these accurate descriptions of these patients?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that, because it's really important to know the terminology. Unfortunately, persistent vegetative state is now used widely in the medical community. Some years back, there were a number of articles wondering how to describe patients who are in a certain situation, and I'll break that down in a second. The main article was a syndrome in search of a name, and the name that was coined then was persistent vegetative state. The people that did that actually, were trying to make it seem humanitarian than in the past, because there had been a lot of pejoratives about these people are vegetables. I think we've all heard people say that. And so it was an attempt to change the terminology to not be as pejorative. Now, the very headline in the Los Angeles Times and in a lot of papers, as well as the terminology that is used, people use different terms interchangeably, and they aren't interchangeable. In other words, saying vegetative patients show signs of life, well, of course they do. There are two medical conditions that are confused. One is coma. Well, actually, three. One is coma, one is persistent vegetative state, and the other is brain death. In a coma, the patient is in a sleep-like state. They don't open their eyes. They appear to be sleeping, or they appear to be someone who would be under heavy anesthesia. That's a coma. The outcome of a coma is fairly rapid. People either come out of the coma and enter into a persistent vegetative state, or slowly recover to a consciousness that other people recognize. But a coma doesn't last very long. The other outcome is death. If a person comes out of a coma to the point of what is called persistent vegetative state, that is a situation where people are awake, but some say that they are unaware. So they have sleep and wake cycles. But many people have said for a long time that people who were diagnosed, and I have to add very definitely misdiagnosed, as being in a persistent vegetative state, were awake, and they were aware, but unable sometimes to communicate that, or people didn't pay attention to the communication. And just very quickly, I want to say that neither coma nor persistent vegetative state medically has anything to do with brain death. In brain death, all functions of the brain shut down. People will say, well, the person is brain dead. And I've asked, well, how long were they on a ventilator? How long this and that? And they say, well, they're not on a ventilator. Well, then they're not brain dead. In brain death, all of the functions of the brain, including breathing, including everything, shuts down. Now, let's go back to persistent vegetative state, or what is called that, because we're all very familiar, I think, with the Terry Schiavo case. And she was said to be in a persistent vegetative state, as were many other people, generally women, there were a few men, who were actually starved and dehydrated to death. They died of dehydration. In many of those cases, family members and caregivers, being the nurses who were closest to those patients, could tell that there was awareness there. And they said, you know, she would smile when I came into the room and spoke to her, or she did respond to this, or she did respond to that. Unfortunately, physicians who don't spend that much time with patients often said, they're just seeing what they want to see. Well, this new study, and there have been several of them, and they're generally out of England. This new study has shown that, in fact, patients that people have discounted as being in a persistent vegetative state are aware, they are thinking, and they're far more of a level of consciousness and awareness that people knew about. This study was really interesting because using an MRI, which is used for a lot of different things, a lot of people go through an MRI, they were able to use that and to be able to determine by what was happening in the brain, watching what was happening, to realize that something was happening there. So they came up with a test. They said, well, think yes and think no. And, of course, when they thought yes and they thought no, what they could see on the MRI was very similar. So they decided, we better figure out a different way. So they said, if your answer to this is yes, imagine playing tennis, because you would think of that and you'd be going back and forth. If your answer is no, imagine that you are walking across a room. Then they asked them questions such as, do you have any brothers? And if it was yes, then they would imagine playing tennis. If they didn't have brothers, and if they imagined walking across the room, the MRI would pick up a different signal, so to speak. And they asked questions, they being the medical people that were doing these tests, knew the answers to the questions, much like somebody does on a lie detector test. And they could determine whether or not the person was accurately thinking yes or no by thinking that they were playing tennis or thinking that they were walking across the room. Now, think about this. This is very significant. It's not just that they knew yes and no, but they were able to follow that instruction of think of playing tennis or think of walking across the room. So this is incredibly important. There will be those, and there already have been those, who have said, ah, this doesn't really mean anything. Oh, yes, it does. And it means that in some cases, tragically, and in more than we have heard about, because we only hear about the celebrated cases where there is a controversy, in many cases, patients who were very much aware and knew what was going on and could hear as people were saying, well, we're going to remove the food and fluids now, they were aware that they were going to be dehydrated to death. They were aware of the fact that people were considering them not to be there at all.
Do you expect this new research to have the kind of impact that it should have on the treatment of these patients? About a minute for a response.
I think that some physicians, and there are some wonderful physicians who recognize that they have been very limited in their understanding. One of our medical consultants says his wife puts it very well. She tells him that the MD after his name does not stand for medical deity. And physicians who recognize that they are not gods, that they are not a medical deity, physicians who recognize that they have limitations in their knowledge and that they have much to learn, I think will treat such patients and go forward in this research, and it will change the way such patients are treated. You will have the other physicians who assume that they know everything and no one else could possibly know anything, and who have probably been involved in dehydrating patients to death, who will want to affirm their mistakes by saying, oh, no, this isn't any good. So you always have people who will accept what is really happening and those who deny it because it suits their own purposes.
How would you respond to those, and these are quoted in the Los Angeles Times, that this is only going to confound and confuse families of these patients and that no doctor will be able to definitively tell a family there's someone in there, or that if they are responsive, they're dealing with a sentient, much less competent person?
Well, I think that it's part of the demeaning and patronizing sort of thing regarding a family. What that physician who would say that is actually saying is, gee, I don't know how to explain it, but I'm not going to say it that way. I'm going to say the families wouldn't understand it. That is so patronizing. It is so demeaning. It kind of reminds me nowadays of people who are talking about the health care reform bill and saying, well, you just don't understand it. I think it's really important for physicians to acknowledge to patients that they might really not know, and then that's the honest thing to say if they say, I don't know. And when they detect some consciousness, no matter how basic it may be, such as in this study, then they should acknowledge that as well, and they should let families know that.
Folks, you can stay informed on end-of-life issues. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the link to the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. Rita Marker is director of the International Task Force on euthanasia and assisted suicide based in Steubenville, Ohio. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
I think this is what people who weren't ready to dismiss the elderly, the injured, the brain injured, the so-called human vegetables, people who are not so ready to dismiss these loved ones of theirs already knew. It's what the nurses that spend a lot of time around these patients already knew or suspected. That the doctors didn't or didn't want to know that these people are still active to the degree that they can be, given their injury or their infirmity, that they're still active, perhaps thinking, responding. Why not give them the benefit of the doubt? That phrase, "I don't know," says, well, we're going to err on the side of protecting this person. Now, sad to say, in medical ethics today, a physician that says, "I don't know," often doesn't err on the side of protecting his patient. He errs on the side of starving them to death, dehydrating them to death, sometimes with the complicity of the family, sometimes without it. Just to be on the safe side. Don't you think this is reasonable for medicine to play it safe, be on the safe side with the lives of patients? Just to be on the safe side, why don't we assume that those who are in these so-called vegetative states are still there? Just to be on the safe side and protect them as we would anyone else, as we would want to be protected. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.